Show.
But you know what the answer is? Love Boat, right? Captain
Steuben?
Love exciting and new. That one, right? Love Boat.
Welcome to the Darren Smith Show.
This is the big one, boys. This is the one that brings us back.
Soon, AM radio will reign king once more.
Ooh, yes.
Now, here's Darren.
We love you. We love you forever and ever.
On Extra 1360.
619 number text in to start hour number three. Cancel Michael Gelkin. Marty, warm up your pipes. Brent, print out some lyrics. Let's go. We want more Marty singing on the radio. That is nothing to do with Michael Gelkin of the Dallas Morning News. Nothing at all. People love when Michael comes on the show. I love when Michael comes on the show. But Marty now has broken a barrier that she sang earlier in the program, and people want a little bit more. We're glad to have brought that back for you, Marty singing the theme to the Love Boat from earlier in the program. We'll see if she does it again. 619 number, please somebody get an idea for tomorrow so Darren doesn't talk about sports. Everybody wants to hear about sports today. Well, you're about to hear about sports because the Dallas Cowboys are getting set to host the San Francisco 49ers. You people can't get into this? Can't get into Cowboys and Niners on a Sunday at 1:30 p.m. here on Extra 1360?
Love, exciting, and new. That one.
Okay. Michael, welcome back. Should we talk to you about the Cowboys or should we just have Marty sing for the next 45 minutes?
Well, I'm enough of a fan, follower, and frequent participator in this program to appreciate the rarity that is Marty Caswell singing really anywhere, but especially live radio. So whatever we need to do to get more of that, I'm willing to step back and let her bless us with her gifts.
All right. Well, we'll call you tomorrow, Michael. Thank you for being understanding. No, I'm kidding.
We'll do a post-game interview. Yeah.
How you been? How's things?
I'm great. Yeah, I'll be great. I was thinking when Marty, you know, because as producer, you know, I get to hear her voice before I jump on with you. And it's just so wonderful to hear her voice. Now it's wonderful to hear yours. It's, you know, we really got to do this more often, if even off air. But no, I'm doing really well. It's like 70 degrees here in Dallas. I just got back to the park with my dog, and now I'm going to be able to write and just do a bunch of playoff-related stuff for the rest of the evening. So all's good. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for asking. Thank you for being available to us. We've enjoyed your coverage all season long as well. I got to start, though, Michael, with something that has absolutely nothing to do with Sunday's game between the Cowboys and the San Francisco 49ers. You covered Eric Weddle when he was with the Chargers. I wonder just what went through your mind when you heard yesterday that Weddle was coming out of retirement to play for the Los Angeles Rams.
I thought it was so awesome. I texted him right away. Yeah, I made my day. I told him that. It's, you know, he's one of the best people that you hope to meet in life, much less the NFL. And so to see him get that opportunity, you know, so far removed from his, you know, career, I think it's just fun. I'm excited to see what kind of role he has. You know, you doubt that he's going to play, you know, 60 snaps, but, you know, does he play 20? Is he, you know, we remember him as a personal protector on the punt team. He's just a versatile guy. Yeah, I'm fascinated. I have so many questions. I want to know more. If he's done an interview with the Rams, I need to go and find it. I'm just fascinated to kind of, I mean, was this something that he was been staying ready for? And do you ever think it was realistic that I'm going to be definitely watching that game just for the Eric Weddle factor.
You obviously are a journalist where we sit around and we speculate about a bunch of stuff every day for 3 hours. And we were speculating yesterday if the other team in Los Angeles had a similar need, would he have made himself available for that other team? Neither one of us seems to think that would have been the case. But I wonder, Michael, if you have an opinion about that and if you wouldn't mind speculating.
Yeah, I think that relationship is pretty much over. It's just, you know, given the way that things ended, I don't see those ships passing each other once again in the ocean. I think they've long since sailed.
And we were talking about that, about how it ended as well. Wasn't there some story about the end of his final season in San Diego involving a hot tub and Mike McCoy? Does any of this sound familiar? Or am I totally making that up?
A hot tub and Mike McCoy?
Yeah. Like there were a bunch of players in a hot tub, including Eric Weddle, and Mike McCoy walked by and said something like, "Hey, so what's your plan for next year?" Or, you know, what do you, you know, he had some sort of weird line and it was kind of awkward. And that's when Weddle, the reality really set in that, you know, this wasn't a negotiation. Like he was not part of the team's future at all. Does that not sound familiar? I guess I'm the only person that remembers that version of the story.
I mean, vaguely, the more you talked about it, the more it rang some sort of faint memory, but I don't know, maybe you know, when the Chargers moved, man, I could never live in San Diego again. So I probably just repressed the end. So I don't fully recall that. Regretfully, I'm interested to hear more.
All right. Well, again, I'll ask around. I don't know if I will or won't. I say that sort of stuff now, and I probably won't. Michael Gelkin, Dallas Morning News, joining us on Extra 1360. Cowboys are going to be hosting the San Francisco 49ers upcoming this weekend. Cowboys won the NFC East with a record of 12-5. San Francisco wins its final regular season game in Los Angeles. They will travel this weekend at 1:30. We saw this in L.A. L.A. is different than Dallas. But we saw in L.A., there were a lot of 49ers fans in that building in SoFi Stadium, so much so that it surprised the quarterback, the coach. It's been a little bit of a story here in Southern California, but we move on. Michael, what are you preparing for? What are the Cowboys expecting just in terms of 49er fans? And there are a lot of them across the country. What are they expecting just in terms of 49ers fans in Dallas upcoming this weekend?
Yeah, sorry, my dog fell. A squirrel has no self-control. Yeah, it's funny because here in Texas, there's this, I say narrative, but kind of where a bunch of Californians are just overrunning the state. You know,
right.
People are moving from California to Texas. They want the cost of living, and when they get here, they drive up the real estate market. And they got their hybrid cars, and they're wanting to turn the state's politics blue. And now, going into Sunday, these damn Californians are trying to turn our blue stadium red. And so it's this kind of a thing that hits on a number of ways. Where yeah, it's very possible that. I think a lot of people are looking toward Sunday curiously as to how many 49ers fans there will be at AT&T Stadium. But there's real belief that, you know, there's going to probably be the lion's share of fans will be Cowboys fans because just the difficulty of getting tickets and just the way that the Cowboys have kind of rolled their tickets out and just the interest here in Dallas for this team. It's very unlikely that this stadium will get overrun with visitors. But I think it'll be interesting, and ultimately it'll kind of falls upon the Cowboys to take whatever number of 49ers fans are at the game, out of the game, based on how they get off to a, you know, kind of start they get off to that contest. So we'll see. But I definitely think what I'm curious about is how many Niners fans will be there.
That is a great line, by the way, about all these Californians moving there, turning a red state blue, and now they're going to turn the blue stadium red. That's amazing. Did you come up with that on your own?
I did. Yeah, I should write it down or something. But yeah, no, I did. I mean, it's kind of, I live my life here that way because I, as a Californian, you know, at heart still, people ask you where you're from, and you say you're not going to like the answer, and you say, oh, you're from California, aren't you? And I say, yeah.
Yeah, that happens there. That happens in Tennessee. If anybody's been to Nashville, and they go, well, what are you doing here? I was in Austin not too long ago. Same questions were being asked. Well, where are you from? You're like, hey, I'm from California. Well, what are you doing here? You buying a house? Why are you driving up the price? Get out. Get on the first plane back in.
Yeah.
I mean, so you've had to deal with that for a couple of years, right? It's a real thing there.
It is a real thing. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's really happening. All right, so the Cowboys have had an interesting season. I don't know that the season was really in every – and there wasn't a ton of drama, was there, Michael, in the NFC East? I think last time we spoke, maybe it was about as close as you could have made the case that somebody other than the Cowboys were going to win the NFC East. But you know, this has been an interesting one because they were the favorites heading in, and then they ran away with the division. They won it by three games. So you know, what did we learn about the Cowboys during the regular season?
Well, their defense is much improved. I think when Dan Quinn got hired, there was a lot of optimism that that would be the number one acquisition for the Cowboys on defense. No matter if it was a number of free agents to come or draft picks to come, that Dan Quinn would be the main one. And I think that largely has held up. The only reason you would say it hasn't is because Micah Parsons, a first-round draft pick, and he will be the AP Defensive Rookie of the Year. He has a very strong case to be Defensive Player of the Year, given how versatile he is. I know TJ Watt has 22.5 sacks, but Micah Parsons has 5 more quarterback pressures and more than 100 fewer pass rush snaps. So Parsons has been phenomenal. But between the two of them, certainly, this defense is much, much improved. That's been the biggest difference that I think that we've learned over the course of the season about the Cowboys. And, you know, we'll see. You know, the 49ers are very physical, creative offense. They want to attack the edges. They have Deebo Samuel, a wide receiver they can line up at running back and just, you know, really hit your C-gap and really make you set your edge and defend. They need to tackle well. They motion a lot, pre-snap, to learn a lot, extract information before you can get going and get in the right formation for a given play. So it's a really high-end offense that the Cowboys are going to be facing on Sunday. So we'll see just how improved this defense is. I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek because I know they're a whole lot better. But, you know, anytime you're talking playoff football, this is when it matters most.
I have follow-ups on both of the names that you mentioned there about Quinn and about Micah Parsons. I'll start with Parsons because we did talk a little bit earlier about Deebo Samuel. And Tim Kawakami, The Athletic, told us, Michael, that Shanahan would love to take credit for how creative they've been in how he's being used, but it sort of fell into the situation. They fell into that situation with him. And Micah Parsons also has an interesting story about him as well. Can you talk to us a little bit about what the belief was that he was going to be when he was drafted 12th overall last year's draft and what he's become there for the Dallas D?
Yeah, great question and framing all of that, because it's much very similar where the Cowboys kind of fell into just how dynamic of a defensive end that Micah Parsons is when he's in that position in certain sub packages. Week two of the season, they just lost to the Buccaneers week one, and then Wednesday practice, the very next practice, they're doing a pretty standard pass rush drill, and DeMarcus Lawrence, their best defensive end, he suffers a Lisfranc fracture to his left foot and is out for, 10 weeks. And now they've got this huge vacancy there. Well, here's Micah Parsons, the inside linebacker we drafted, but we knew he's versatile. He was a blue chip, five-star type of high school player at defensive end before he became more of a linebacker at Penn State. He's got great rush ability. We believe in that. Let's see exactly what he can handle. Let's see what he can do. And he was phenomenal. I mean, he just worked the right tackle for the LA Chargers. Not a very great right tackle by any stretch, but certainly was a bit of a sign of what was to come. And so that was the first two straight games that he was exclusively a defensive end. And Micah Parsons was a big part of both those wins. It's the start of a 5-game win streak. And, it's not very often you can lose your best player on defense and then learn that maybe he wasn't your best player on defense because the guy, the rookie who was out of football the previous year, opting out of his junior season, just switched from inside linebacker to defensive end and did it in such fashion where he didn't miss a beat. So now the Cowboys have both guys, DeMarcus Lawrence, Micah Parsons. Randy Gregory has been sensational, though he's not quite totally healthy. But yeah, it's been impressive to see what Micah Parsons has done. And the Cowboys really love the guy. He was the number one defender on their draft board, but they didn't think he was going to be this good.
And Dan Quinn, Kyle Shanahan, is that the chess match that most are talking about this week with respect to the coordinator, the head coach? But is that the relationship between those two dating back to their coaching days in Atlanta?
Yeah, definitely. And before I forget, if we have time, I want to ask you a question, but we'll get to that if we have time.
Okay.
But yeah, Dan Quinn, no doubt. I mean, two guys who were in Atlanta together, they kind of, how it can be competitive at practice where you've got, one coordinator and then another guy on the other side of the ball, and you kind of dial things up and test each other and kind of talk about it in meetings and between drills. And there's that kind of a fun competitive spirit. That was Dan Quinn and Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta. And you see the way that they've both had success thereafter. It's interesting how they've evolved as coaches. And, Dan Quinn, Kyle Shanahan was saying this week, you can turn on the tape and you can see the Dan Quinn defense because the way that they fly around, the way they play together, the way they attack the football. But it's really different conceptually, where a lot of the coverage is that Dan Quinn was known for running in Seattle and in Atlanta. He's really, by and large, abandoned here with the Cowboys because he's like, people know me as this cover one, cover three guy, but I think the league's kind of figured that out. And so let me do a little bit more quarters. Let me change the rate at which I do man. And like all these different tweaks that he's done and really ultimately taking advantage of the personnel that he has. It's really remarkable what Dan Quinn has done, and he deserves whatever head coach interest. You guys, I can't really refer to San Diego that anymore, but the Chargers and folks in the AFC West might see a lot of him because I've been told from folks in Denver, one in Denver, that they really, really like him. He's a clubhouse leader for that head coach job.
Dan Quinn is right, because he turned out an opportunity, right, to go interview in Jacksonville, or he removed his name from consideration really early in that process?
Yeah, he declined an in-season interview with them. He was just focused on that. And I think that was probably the smart call, because I would be surprised if Jacksonville chooses a non-offensive-minded head coach. It just makes too much sense to get an offensive guy into that room with your former number one overall pick and Trevor Lawrence.
Well, then again, I also thought that about the Chargers, too, and they ended up going with a defensive guy as well. So who knows, right? I mean, I guess the most important thing is you get the coordinator right. You get the offensive coordinator right in that situation.
Totally.
Not to get off on some sort of tangent here. The running back dynamic's been interesting as well. Again, following from where I follow, Michael, which is a little bit removed from it, following through you on Twitter, reading some of your stories, It sounds like Jerry himself, Jerry Jones, was asked a ton of questions this year about what the future looks like for Ezekiel Elliott given the emergence of Tony Pollard.
Yeah, and really there's not much to answer, because when you evaluate the structure of Ezekiel Elliott's contract, and you know, for all the criticism, you know, talking about Eric Weddle, you know, I think sometimes when players hold out, they get a lot of criticism. They get criticism from fans. Sometimes the owner can say something. It can be a toxic, hostile type of situation. Well, in this instance, Zeke Elliott holds out for a contract, and it has served him well. I mean, just objectively, you look at it, the Cowboys have already full and guaranteed Zeke Elliott's 2022 salary as of last March. So there is no question as to whether or not Zeke Elliott is going to be part of this team. He will be.
What question did you have for us?
Do people care in San Diego when the when the Chargers lose the way that they did? Does it still bring a smile into faces, or is it so far past the fact it's just total apathy at this stage?
Yes, all of it. Everything still applies. You had a lot of people, because it was Sunday night. It was a standalone game. It was the Raiders. You had a lot of people who still are committed to the team, who expressed their disappointment in the way that game ended. I could look at our text line here, the way people interact with other shows. It seems like there's been a lot of second guessing about Brandon Staley's handling of that one. I see a lot of people who are delighted. I see a lot of criticism towards hosts who expressed similar delight that the Chargers lost in spectacular fashion. So it feels like it's still an emotional topic for a lot of people, at least the kind of person who's going to interact with radio stations like this.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you.
Does that make sense?
There's a ton of sense. Appreciate it.
Yeah, again, I mean, I think it's still, you know, especially, Michael, we didn't even realize this, that yesterday was the 5-year anniversary of the team announcing that it was leaving town.
Oh, wow. That's right. Yep.
You didn't have that memory saved on your phone? You didn't get an alert yesterday when you woke up?
Well, I remember because the newspaper that day was on Friday the 13th.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yep.
Huh. See, I did. I would not have even known that that was a Friday. I just remembered where I was when I heard the news. Where were you?
I think Adam Schefter broke it, and I was at home with my parents' house. And then I drove from there to Chargers Park, where I saw the collection of memorabilia start. I saw the egg yolk on the glass door because a fan had thrown eggs at the building. And just, you know, as a San Diegan, you know, native, I didn't need to use my imagination to appreciate the emotion surrounding that decision in terms of how it was going to be felt by people in that community. But certainly got a taste of it that night and throughout the next day, and I think really, you know, the period since to follow.
Yeah, I don't know, Marty, would you agree on that? I mean, I still think that game, I think a lot of people have found other things to do with their Sunday nights, especially, or Sundays with the Chargers playing, but I think that still touched the nerve for a lot of people in different ways.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think there's still, it's not a daily topic, and it's changed, but I think there's a good segment of people that took great delight in the Chargers charging, if you want to call it, losing the way they did in spectacular fashion against the Raiders of all teams. So I think a lot of people have moved on. I really believe that. But there are still people that are just, you know, they have the inner conflict and they like watching Justin Herbert and this and that. But man,
You know, there also was something, Michael, Marty, sorry to interrupt.
It's okay.
There was this interesting sequence where they showed Dean Spanos down on the field. And I think that probably reminded people why it was that they would be happy to watch the team lose.
Yep.
Yeah.
Were you watching that? Like, do you remember that, where Dean and Susie walked down there onto the field?
Oh, sorry. I don't know. I don't remember that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, they walked down like late, like in overtime, and then they lost like 5 minutes.
When it looked like they were going towards a tie, there goes Dean, you know, out there to go ahead and, you know, smile and preen for cameras.
And Al's like, oh, there's Dean and Susie Spanos down there on the field. Yeah. And then a couple of minutes later, they lost the game. So I think if anybody was on the fence, you know, maybe that image of Dean walking down to the field pushed them over one direction.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, and who am I to say anything, but I think, you know, bitterness eventually, I hope, kind of evolves to apathy at some point, or disregard, because, you know, if you're going to go your whole life being bitter about the decision years ago, I mean, obviously there's no replacing it. And, you know, the Chargers were such an institution in San Diego that was interwoven with family relationships and friend dynamics and all that. So it's a hard thing to lose, because not just losing a team, you're losing that part of it. But it's been a while, so I was just curious.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of people, they'll never get over it. But I think you're right. Over a long enough timeline, of course, you're going to have a whole generation of people who grew up in this town who aren't going to have that emotional attachment to it. So, therefore, it will fade away at some point.
But I need to say one more thing, though, and I agree with what you're both saying, and I do believe that people, at some point, there's going to be more apathy. But Michael, listen, do you know someone, anybody at your former employer that can have them, the UT, stop writing report cards in the Chargers? Do they do that in St. Louis still for the Rams?
Can they do what? I'm sorry.
Can we stop writing report cards for the Chargers every single week?
I can't comment about report card. I don't know.
Okay. Well said, Michael. Thank you. Who do you like? You get the home team? Do you make predictions? Do you have to do that sort of stuff?
I have to do it, and I'm picking the Cowboys. Yeah. I think they're more talented, and they're well enough coached that I think they'll be able to withstand it. But I think it'd be a really good game. They better be ready to play because the Niners do a lot of really sound things offensively and defensively.
Yeah, I also saw Michael Irvin groaning on a San Francisco radio station. That's like the team he did not want to face this weekend.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a playoffs. You're not going to. Yeah, I mean, I think
exactly. I mean, unless you're playing the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, like.
Yeah, and ultimately your competitor. Like, I don't think Michael Irvin would be, you know, saying, you know, bemoaning that situation if he was a player.
Yeah, he faced much better 49er teams than that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well said.
Thank you, Michael. Great to hear your voice.
Likewise. Take care, guys.
Michael Gelkin, everybody. Dallas Morning News. We'll take a timeout. Come back. We'll speak with Mark Medina, NBA.com.